Okay, good afternoon. So we spoke yesterday about the status of contemporary Kohanim and whether we refer to our Kohane Chazaka, those who assume that they're Kohanim today, are they really considered to be full-fledged Kohanim or not? Now let's expand the discussion a little bit to the following story. When you have, let's say, a Baal Tshuva who assumes that he is a Kohen, or somebody who grew up in a secular, in an unaffiliated home, and assume that they are Kohanim, what is their status? Should we say that as long as they assume that they are Kohanim, we have the right to believe them and to allow them to duchen and to allow them to do everything else that Kohanim do the mitzvah pidur naben, or should we assume that not? Rav Moshe Feinstein addresses this in the Igros Moshe, and he writes the following. B'davar echad shehechzik atzma l'kohen. Somebody who always assumed throughout life that he was a Kohen, v'nisbarer, and then it becomes clear, shekol yediyasu hu me'aviv. Then he realizes later on, when he thinks about it more carefully, that the only way that he knows this is because his father told him. Now, when did his father tell him? Many years ago, when he had a bar mitzvah, Amar Shehu Kohen, the father said, you're going to get the first aliyah, because in fact, you are a Kohen. Aval Aviv Eino Shomer Torah Klal. The father is not a religious practicing Jew at all. He's not Orthodox. Vegam, and also on top of that, Shebarach mi beis aviv bialduso mitzad mardaba aviv. He said this kid ran away from his home so many years ago, and the only memory that he has about the fact that maybe he's a Kohen is because on the occasion of his bar mitzvah, his father told him he's going to get the first aliyah, but however, the father was not a religious person. He says, Lefi hadas, lo hayelo leida kol kach davar kazeh, shelachein ein lo shum ne'emanus lazeh shehu Kohen. He says, as far as I'm concerned, there is no reason to assume that he's a Kohen at all, because there's no credible source to rely upon to assume that way. And Rav Moshe is so convinced of his psak that he says that this man, who ended up being married to a Gioris, a Kohen is not allowed to marry a Gioris, this man, Rav Moshe said, is allowed to remain married to his wife, the Gioris, because there is no reason to really believe that this person is a Kohen. They would not religious people along the way, and therefore we have no reason to assume that when they say they were Kohanim, that they actually were. Where is this assumption from? What is the basis of such an opinion? So it really comes from Shulchan Aruch. In the very beginning of Eben HaEzer, the Shulchan Aruch there talks about various aspects of Yuchsin. In Eben HaEzer, we talk about getting married and getting divorced, Kiddushin and Nisuin. So part of the important aspect of getting married is you have to first look into the prospective spouse and make sure that they are Jewish, make sure whether they're Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, you have to know exactly who the person is, Mamzerim. So that's what the beginning of Eben HaEzer deals with. So there, in the very beginning in Siman Gimel, the Shulchan Aruch writes, Mi sheba bizman hazeh ve'amar kohen ani. Somebody who comes today and says, I am a Kohen, Eino Naman, he is not believed. Vein malinosa lekuhuna al piyatzmo. Just by him declaring to the world that he's a Kohen, that will not be good enough. Velo yikra b'torah rishon, we would not give him the first aliyah. Velo yisa es kapo, we're not allowed to have this person duchen. Aval, however, if a person comes and he says, I am a Kohen, so we don't allow him to do pidur naben, we don't allow him to duchen, we don't give him the first aliyah. However, says the Shulchan Aruch, once you claim to be a Kohen, even though as a community we don't believe you, but you believe yourself, and therefore, says the Shulchan Aruch, you have a problem, because now you have made yourself usher to marry a grusha zona v'chalala, ve'ena matame l'mesim, v'lo noseo nitmalok, and if he does violate any of the principles of kuhuna, he goes to a funeral that he wasn't allowed to attend, or he marries a woman that he wasn't allowed to marry, says the Shulchan Aruch, loke. He is punished for doing so because, as far as you're concerned, if you claim to be a Kohen, you have to abide by those rules. We as a community, says the Shulchan Aruch, don't have a right to believe you because it is not really based on any credible source. Then he writes the following. Haya ed echad me'ed alav. What if somebody says, I know about this person that he's a Kohen. Not that he's saying about himself, but a different person says about him. Then says the Shulchan Aruch, likras batara rishon, lisa es kapav. He's allowed to then duchen like normal, then he's allowed to get the first aliyah, va'afilu aviv neman alav, and says the Shulchan Aruch, even the father would be believed to say that about his son. It's just that we have to make sure that it's a separate person outside of himself who is saying this testimony that he is a Kohen. So that is what the Shulchan Aruch says. However, in Yerudea, in the very beginning of Yerudea, in Hilchos Shechita, we are told, the only person who has ne'emanus, the only person who has the right to be believed is someone who is otherwise a religious person, somebody who's otherwise a orthodox individual. But here, where you have the only person who is testifying about him is his father, and his father was not a religious person at all, so Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva, there's no reason to have any suffix, any doubt that he's a Kohen. We don't have the right to believe that he's a Kohen, and therefore he says, we would not assume that he's a kohen at all, and he would be allowed to remain married to his wife, the Gioris, who otherwise is not allowed to be married to a kohen. Once in a while, the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael are presented with a couple where the husband assumed that he was a kohen his whole life, but now the husband is trying to do everything he can to make himself not a kohen. Why? Because he can't get married, he can't find a shidduch, and now the only person that's a prospective shidduch for him is somebody that generally a kohen is not allowed to marry. So the question is, what do we do when you have a situation like that? So generally, when you have somebody who comes from a family whose entire family has been duchening, whose entire family has been acting like kohanim, we have no reason to assume that there's any reyesa, which means we have no reason to assume that there's any inkling that we have to base, how would you say a reyesa in English? I don't know how you say that. What? Not a blemish. What? There's nothing that negates that. When we have a person whose whole family has been duchening for years, whose whole family has not been going to cemeteries or funerals for years, so we have no reason to negate that assumption, and therefore we would assume that the person is a kohen. He shows up now to the Rabbanut, and he says he wants to get married to a woman he's not allowed to marry. We're not going to allow for that. We have another indication that often is used, and sometimes it sounds funny, but sometimes this is what they do. They'll go back to the grandfather's kever in Europe somewhere, and they'll find that there were hands. Very often Kohanim are buried, and they have certain symbols on the kever that show, that indicate, that the person was a kohen. If that is the case, we generally assume that the family is considered to be Kohanim, and we don't have a right to negate that assumption at all. However, the question that is sometimes discussed in contemporary Sfarim is, what if you have someone with the last name Katz, or someone with the last name Cohen, or someone with the last name Kahano or Kagan? All of those names are generally names that are used by Kohanim. So would that be enough of an indication alone that the person is considered to be a kohen? It sounds like a fairly simple question. It sounds like it's not so lumdish, but when you think about it and you break it down, it's not a simple question at all. And in order to fully understand the question, let's break it up as follows. On the one hand, you have what we refer to as a rov. The Gemara tells us, based on Psukim and Parshas Mishpatim, Acharei Rabim Lahatos. When you have a rov, when you have the overwhelming assumption is X, so then we have a right to follow it. So take, for example, the overwhelming majority of people in the Jewish community are non-Kohanim. So on the one hand, you have a rov that most Jews are not Kohanim. That's number one. That's factor number one. On the other hand, you have a conflicting, you have an opposing factor, another consideration, and that is the fact most people with the name Katz are Kohanim. Most people with the name Cohen or Kagan are Kohanim. So we have two conflicting roves here. On the one hand, most people who are Jewish are not Kohanim, which means that we should have an indication that maybe this person, knowing nothing about them, is probably not a Kohen. On the other hand, most people who have the name Katz are considered to be Kohanim, and therefore maybe we should assume that that is the right way to go. So what does one do when you have two contradictory roves, two contradictory assumptions that present themselves to each other, yeah? He's not sure. He says somewhere got lost along the way, but he says maybe from the fact that my name is Katz, we should assume that I'm a Kohen. If he says he's a Kohen, and we have every right to assume that his father was a Kohen because his father used to duchen, so we don't question that assumption. That's what we spoke about yesterday. But here we're talking about a person who's not really sure. He doesn't really have a Misora, he doesn't have a tradition, but he says, my name is Katz, I have a right to assume that I'm a Kohen, but really is that enough to base an assumption off of, or perhaps not? So that is a major question. Again, as we said, on the one hand, most people in the Jewish community are not Kohanim, so we should say, Aslinam Basaruba, you fit into the majority of people, and you are not a Kohen. On the other hand, most people who present themselves with the name Katz are Kohanim, and therefore maybe we should assume that you really would be a Kohen. Again, as we mentioned, two conflicting roves here that have to be reckoned with. So let me just try to break it down a little further. We have a Gemara in Meseches Ksubas, which says the following. The Gemara says that most women who get married are considered besulos. Most women who get married are considered first-time marriages. Once in a while, you have an almana who will get remarried. But says the Gemara, most of the time, not knowing anything about a situation, you pass by a wedding hall, you see a chasen and kala under the chuppah, you have a right to assume, says the Gemara, that it's probably a first-time marriage, it's not going to be an almana. That's what the Gemara says. Because we have a rov, the majority of women that are getting married are considered to be first-time marriages. However, says the Gemara, we have another consideration, and that is that a besula yeshla kol kishei nisis. When you have a girl who's getting married for the first time, we make a big deal about it. So from the fact that you weren't invited, or the fact that you didn't hear about it, maybe that means there's something strange. Maybe that means this woman is not getting married for the first time. Usually a second marriage is a little bit more low-key, it's a little bit quieter. So the Gemara says, when I look at a couple and I'm trying to figure out, Are they getting married for the first time, and therefore the woman deserves a ksuba, which is more elaborate? Or are they getting married only for the second time? She's an almana, and therefore she deserves less of a ksuba. How do I figure out, without knowing anything, how do I know whether or not this person is a first-time marriage or a second? But says the Gemara, not so clear. On the one hand, most marriages in the world are a first marriage. On the other hand, says the Gemara, most of the times when someone's getting married for the first time in their lives, everyone's going to know about it. So from the fact that you don't know, it seems that you are probably looking at somebody who's getting married not for the first time. So again, you have a situation where you have two conflicting roves. Each one is contradictory. On the one hand, you have a right to assume based on the rove this is a first marriage. On the other hand, we have another rove which should make us assume this is a second marriage. Take for another case. The Gemara has a Maseches Yevamos. Seems to be there was a strange phenomenon in the times of Chazal, we don't have it today, where there were two different types of pregnancies. A woman could give birth either after 7 months and the baby would be healthy, or a woman could give birth after 9 months and the baby would also be healthy. If she gave birth in the eighth, we assume that's very dangerous, either because it's overdue from the 7 month or it's underdue from the ninth, whatever it is. It's a preemie. So that's what the Gemara has the assumption. Women can either give birth after 7 or after 9. That's considered healthy. A woman here gives birth, and we're not sure whether it's a 7-month pregnancy or it's a 9-month pregnancy. So how would we know? Well, says the Gemara, rove women in the world, most women in the world give birth after 9 months. And therefore, we have a right to assume, not knowing anything, that this child is a 9-month pregnancy. However, says the Gemara, most women also who are pregnant for 9 months, after 3 months of pregnancy, it's noticeable that she's pregnant, which we know is the case today as well. So from the fact that we didn't notice it after 3 months, maybe that's something suspicious. Maybe that shows us that this is not a 9-month pregnancy. Once again, you have a case where you have two different factors, two contributing roves. Each one of them is going in a different direction. Am I being clear? On the one hand, you have a rove of the entire world. Most women in the entire world give birth after 9 months. On the other hand, we have a factor that if this woman would have been pregnant after 3, we would have noticed. And from the fact that we didn't notice, maybe there's something strange about the fact that we didn't notice that, and maybe it means it was a 7-month pregnancy. That's what the Gemara discusses. In both of these cases, the Gemara comes to the conclusion, both in the case of the woman being pregnant and in the case of where one doesn't know whether or not a woman is getting married for the first time or perhaps she's an almana and getting married for the second, the Gemara comes to the conclusion that we go after the rove ha'olam. So in case number one, since most women in the world who get married are getting married for the first time, we have a right to assume this is a first-time marriage. I wasn't invited. Okay, so you weren't invited. Something strange about that. But we have a right to assume that you look at the overall perspective. And since in most of the world we assume, you look at the general klali, since in most of the world we assume the most expansive rove is that most women in the world get married for the first time, and that's what you're looking at, that's where you have the right to determine is going on in front of you. Same over here. Since most women in the world give birth after 9 months, we have a right to assume this is a 9-month pregnancy. You didn't hear about it after 3 months. Okay, doesn't make a difference. There's something strange about that, but it doesn't take away from the fact that the expansive rove in the world is that most women in the world give birth after 9 months. Let's try to apply it here. Again, we have two conflicting roves. When you have somebody who presents themselves, they don't know whether or not they're a Kohen. On the one hand, you have most Jews in the world are not Kohanim. So that would make us determine the fact that this person is probably not a Kohen. On the other hand, most Jews in the world with the name Katz are Kohanim. So that should be an indication that this person really is a Kohen. So which rove do we look at? Do we look at the expansive rove, which tells us this person is a non-Kohen, or do we look at the individual and say, well, looking at your story alone, it would probably indicate that you are a Kohen. So that is the question. And based on what we've said, I would have imagined that the halacha should be that this person is considered not to be a Kohen. On the other hand, we have a Gemara in which we are told the following. I'm sorry, Tosas writes a story in Yevamos that Misha Balafanein of Amr Yisrael Ani, somebody who we know nothing about, shows up and says, I am a Jew. We don't know whether or not he comes from a Jewish community. We don't know anything about this person. He just shows up and says he's a Jew. Says the Gemara, Naaman, he's believed. Why is he believed? Because who in their right mind would ever show up to a shul and say, I'm a Jew, for no other reason? Most of the people that come and say they're a Jew are certainly going to be Jewish. That's what Tosas writes. We have a right to assume the person is a Jew. Well, really? Is that the only consideration? I should have considered the fact that there are millions of people in the world, and most of the millions of people in the world are not Jewish. So you have an expansive rove which tells you this person is not Jewish. You have a small percentage of people that show up and present themselves in a shul not knowing anything about their history. who we assume are Jewish. So which one do I look at? So we have this very complicated issue, which is the crux of the debate with regard to somebody who presents themselves and says their name is Katz or their name is Cohen, and they don't really know about their lineage. They don't really know whether or not they are Kohanim. Do we have a right to assume that the person is in fact a Kohen or perhaps not? This is a very contemporary question, and it's not a simple one at all. It was a major point of debate among the contemporary Rabbanim, among the contemporary Svarim. Should we assume that just by having the name Katz alone, that's an indication that you're a Kohen? Or the overwhelming majority of those who wrote about this assume that probably that is not a safe assumption. Very often you have people whose name is Katz or Cohen or something else, and it's because they adopted the name of the great-great-grandmother somewhere along the line, not because the father was a Cohen, but because the mother was a more prominent family. There were many great Gedolim who adopted the name of the mother's side and not the father, not for feminist reasons, just because it was more practical, or they were a more prominent family, or for whatever reason they wanted to go to try to evade the army. So sometimes people came up with a name. It's not always a clear indication that the person is considered a bona fide and an absolute Kohen. Yes?
Do